Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Start thinking outside of those dots and saying, what could we do? How do we get this thing moving? The only way you can do that is to give people permission to imagine and then present their imaginative thoughts. That, to me, is the crux of innovation. If you don't imagine, you're just going to basically base it on your previous experience, and that's never going to get you anywhere.
Welcome back. It's that time of the week again. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't listened to my recent conversations yet with Simon Leslie of Inc. Global and communication specialist Janice Tomich, then do check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation, of course. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Neil Butler. He's the director of Untypical and a self-described untypical thinker. Starting his professional life as a secondary school teacher in regional Victoria in Australia, he left teaching for 6 months, as he said, in 1988 to see what was going on in the outside world and how that could be applied to his teaching. Now, over 30 years later, and the 6 month break from teaching continues. He has gained experience in a wide variety of local, regional, and global roles, including in education and training, business and technical support, credit management, business process improvement, and transformation leadership. In 2011, he began Untypical, serving the needs of small business owners. He's very active in community radio. He runs a broadcasting service for the Victorian State Aussie Rules Football League, and he hosts four podcasts: Wow Pod, Untypical Thoughts, Home Buyers Q&A, and Two Blokes Chatting. In our discussion today, Neil talked to me about moving from a necessity-driven thinking to a possibility-driven thinking. We talked about how to combine imagination and transformation. And he explained that his philosophy is forget outside the box, let's just burn the box. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Neil Butler. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from what seems just like down the road, from Geelong, Australia, Neil Butler, who's a transformational leader. He's a broadcaster. We've just been talking a lot about broadcasting, and he's a commentator and also managing director of Untypical. Neil also hosts the Wow Pod podcast, which stands for Words of Wisdom, as well as three other podcasts. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Neil. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, thanks, Jürgen. It's great to be invited to come along on someone else. It's funny sitting on the other side of the microphone, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It requires a bit of an adjustment. I was on one earlier this week, and I thought I have to sit back and wait for questions now.
If I start asking you questions, just ignore it. That's fine.
Yeah, that's all right. I love to have a conversation, so questions back and forth is fine.
Excellent.
All right. Now, I know you've got a really interesting background. You started off as a teacher, and then you went into business, particularly in the rural business. And you were telling me a little bit about how
that's played out in your current business where you're helping somebody set up a podcast, which is related to a rural business. Now you do business consulting, but primarily broadcasting on radio and on podcasts. So what have been some of the experiences that have kind of shaped what you do today, and how did you actually get into broadcasting?
Well, it's a long story, so I won't bore you with all the detail, but I started life as a school teacher, and that was in the early to mid 80s, and was fortunate enough to land at the forefront of IT education when IT education was something that you only did at university. And I lobbed into a brand new school, and where schools were spending $5,000 or $10,000 on buying a single computer, I was the only person in the foundation staff that had ever used a computer in 1984. So by default, I became the computer expert. And they said, here's $250,000. Go and build the first ever computer center into a school. So by the time I'd finished my third and fourth years of teaching, I'd kind of done the stuff that most people wait until they're 15 years, 20 years into their teaching career. So I thought, I've got to do something else. And if I was going to be serious about being an IT teacher, I thought we really should go out and see what business wants us to do. Because there's no point teaching kids how to use computers that are not going to be valuable once they get out. And it was very, very early days, obviously. So I took 6 months off, and that 6 months started on the 6th of February, 1989. And the 6 months continues to drag on until this very day. It's been the longest 6 months in history. But I lobbed into a company, a multinational company that had a really big footprint across Australia. And I was fortunate enough to work with their distributor network, which meant working with their regional guys. So probably the first turning point was landing in corporate. The second big thing was giving the opportunity to work in regional Australia. I taught for a year in a regional town, in fact, 3 years in regional towns, and this just seemed like home. It was exactly where I found that I wanted to be, and ever since then, I've had a real focus on the regional stuff. Broadcasting was an accident. My daughter found herself involved in some community broadcasting, and one day she rang me and said, "Dad, I have got a problem. My co-host isn't going to turn up. What do we do?" So we organized very quickly to have a program. It was New Year's Eve, 2007, I reckon it would have been. And we organized a broadcast on the fly, and the station manager was listening, and he came in and said, "You need to have your own program, mate. We're not going to let you get away with that." And subsequently, I started radio broadcasting. And as you'd know, Jürgen, once someone sticks a microphone in front of your mouth, particularly as an introvert, we identified the fact we're both massive introverts. When there's a microphone in front of you, you start feeling really good about it or really bad about it. And I just felt right at home behind it. So that's kind of how we went into it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You reminded me of something with the computer story, because I was working for ACFA in the very early days. And the regular listeners will know that that was my dream job at the time, because I'm a really keen hobby photographer. I have been all my life. And of course, what happened there, the digital photography revolution came in and kind of disrupted everything. And I lived through all that and was shocked and horrified at the response of ACFA, seeing it from the inside. But one thing I remember one day going down to a floor below where we were in the research division. So I was working as a research chemist, and there was this IBM PC with some manual book and floppy disks and stuff. And I remember asking someone, you know, "What do you do with this thing?" And they said, I think you can look up library books on there, but nobody knows how to use it here. So I thought, all right, well, do I have to ask anybody to use it? I don't know who to ask. All right. So I just sat down there, opened the manual up, figured out how to turn the thing on, figured out how to boot it up. You know, it was MS-DOS 2.0 or something like that at the time.
Quite modern.
And played around with it a little bit. And within a couple of weeks, I was the IT expert for the company. It's pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
Didn't take much.
And everybody would come to me, how do we hook up this instrument to the computer, and how do we computerize this whole thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I'd done one unit of computer science at university.
Yeah. So that made you the most qualified person in Victoria. It was bizarre, because in those days there was a thing called CPM, and there was a thing called Apple DOS. I think they called it Apple DOS in those days. And we had an Apple IIe clone at the school I was teaching. I used to pick up the whole thing and take it home with me at night to muck around on the phone. It was just really bizarre. And then we ended up installing, I think, 25 BBC branded computers. And they were put out as educational computers by the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. So, yeah, it never, ever thought that we'd get to where we are now. It's just quite mind-blowing.
It is, yeah. But I guess in some ways that perhaps was an early indicator of somebody that was keen on pushing the boundaries and exploring new ways of doing things. So is that how you see it? Because I think that leads on beautifully into the business you're in today, which is a company called Untypical. So I'm really keen to hear about that.
Yeah, I guess I've never really fitted into the standard box, if you like. One of the slogans I use is, I don't think outside the box, I set fire to the box. It's just, it could be Life of Brian, it could be one of the other Monty Python films, where there's a group of people standing around chanting, "We are individuals." And there's a bloke standing off to the side saying, "I'm not." And of course, it's the irony of that. And I feel a bit like that guy. I'm not one of them. I've never really fitted into the standard way of thinking about stuff, I guess. So when I got to teaching, this whole every 50 minutes you must, end the class that you're in and then get up and move into the next classroom and then go through year 9 mathematics again, I can teach fractions with my eyes closed. It's just one of those things that, you do it 15 times a week, you go in and teach year 9 maths. And I think, really? There's got to be something more to it. So I guess when the opportunity arose to do something different, in that case, computer education, as it was called in those days, before it became IT. It was an opportunity, I guess, to sort of set forward into the direction I'm going. And then having worked in the organization I worked in the division that looked after distributors, that was it was BP. We're allowed to name names. I keep forgetting whether I'm allowed to name names or not. Looking after BP distributors across Australia meant that I was seeing individual businesses operating under a massive brand. So it was the way that businesses took that and looked at it differently depending upon where they were. Because if you're running a fuel distributorship in Esperance in Western Australia, you're doing it very differently to if you're running it in Cairns in Queensland. So that opportunity to see people doing the same thing differently also appealed to me. So when BP said to me, "Here's a check, we'd like you to go and find something else to do with your life," I thought, well, let's try contracting, which is where I started. And what I quickly found was being a business analyst or being a change manager or being something like that just didn't sit comfortably with me. Yes, I could do the work, but being stuck in a box was never going to work, which is where I started my own business.
So what do you do today then and why?
Well, what I'm doing today is not very much because we are doing this in the middle of the COVID situation. The last 3 years I've been working on a really interesting project with one of the four major banks. And what I try and do in my business, and it fitted really nicely, was take people out of their comfort zone. I know that's a really bad cliche, but I don't believe in stepping outside of your comfort zone. I believe in taking a flying leap out of your comfort zone. If you take a step out of your comfort zone, by definition, you can take a step back into it. So what I try and do is go in and do things and really push the boundaries of the way we're thinking. And a couple of little sort of trigger words that I like to use is wherever you use the word should, take that out and replace it with the word could. So rather than we should be doing this, we could be doing this. Rather than saying we should have, I always say we could have. And by doing that, what we're doing is we're pushing people beyond should sort of says, well, there's some kind of unwritten rule that we need to adhere to, so we should do this thing. We should open between 9 and 5. Why? It makes no sense to me in a place like Geelong, which for those who are not familiar with our area, because I know this goes into various parts of the world, Geelong is a regional city with the Surf Coast and the Ballerine around us. We have 5 branches of that bank in that zone. Why wouldn't we have each day of the week one of those banks opening from 4 p.m. till midnight? So that people, if they run a small business, think those sorts of things. What could we do to make it easier rather than what should we do? Well, we should do it. That's what banks do. I think that's kind of one of the pushes. The other thing I try and do is get rid of the apostrophe. Here's a challenge for people listening. Think of a word that's got an apostrophe in it. And I don't mean a possessive apostrophe. I mean a contraction type apostrophe. That's a positive word. It's really tricky. Couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't, won't, don't, didn't, might have. They're all words that imply something negative. If you have to make the conscious effort to use the word not, I did not, I will not, I cannot, it's kind of like a deliberate statement of not failure, but a deliberate statement saying I'm choosing not to, rather than actually, no, I couldn't, I didn't, I wouldn't, I would, I, you know, it, to me, they're sort of mumbly words that people can get away with really easily. So that's kind of the parameters with each I try and work.
Fascinating. So to me, that sounds like you take people and you change the mindset from a necessity driven mindset to a possibility mindset. So it's, yeah, what I'm driven by necessity is very much a, what's the right word I'm looking for? It's very much a, it's not an abundance mindset, whereas possibility is an abundance mindset.
Yes. Yes,
and it's a scarcity mindset. That's the word I'm looking for, scarcity.
Yeah, well done. I knew we'd stumble over it eventually. I wasn't sure which word you were looking for. But I think one of the things too is, having been in banking, risk is always an issue, right? I get that. The last two major pieces of work I've done helping a state government department put a system into intensive care units. And the next one, I've gone and worked in with one of the major banks. Now, they're two organizations that I really don't want people taking major risks. Yeah, ICUs and banking. Let's get it right. But at the same time, let's also step outside the boundaries. In the oil industry some time ago, Shell and also Caltex decided that they weren't particularly good retailers. They were great at making stuff. They were great at marketing their products. But they went to Coles and to Woolworths respectively and said, actually, you guys are really good at retailing. We'll pass that bit over and you guys can deal with it. Well, why don't banks do that? Why don't banks say to their brokers, you're really good at selling home loans. Why don't you sell credit cards for us as well? But you wouldn't do that because that's not what banks do. And it's that kind of mindset that I'm trying to break with the transimagination kind of concept.
Yeah. And to me, the, you know, that idea often comes back to whether people are focused on delivering the best outcome for their customers or whether they're just internally focused on what's productive for us and how do we manage the risk and at the same time be more productive, how can we get more out of our own people and so on. And often that internal focus forgets about the customer experience and looking at things from a customer experience. So your example about banks opening in outside of normal business hours, to me, that is very customer experience focused, because at a time when people are working normally, pre-COVID, let's say, very few people who are working would be able to get to the bank during business hours.
Yep, absolutely. And what tends to happen with that is then, having been involved in one of these organizations, they go, well, look, no one's going to the bank. We can close them down. And we'll set up a banking, an online, like an after-hours banking. One of the major banks has announced in recent times, and this is just one of the most brilliant ideas I think a bank has ever come up with. Regional branches are critical to the small town in which they belong. So what they're now saying is, we've got all these people sitting in branches that are not being super utilized because they're not people queuing up at the front door. But what they've decided to do is they're saying, right, in the morning in these smaller branches, we'll open the branch from, say, 9 till midday. And that way we can keep the branch going. But what do we do with the staff in the afternoon? We actually pump them into our phone system as well. So people can then, say you work at a branch in, I don't know, pluck a town out of the name, Charlton in Northwest Victoria. You'll be actually opening the branch between, say, 9 and 1. And then in the afternoon, you've got a full day's work because you then jump on the phones and deal with customers all over Australia. Now, that to me is creative thinking. They're not closing down branches because they can't justify them. They're keeping them open, but they're saying to people in the town, you want to see us, come and see us in the morning. That to me is showing a little bit of customer focus.
Yeah, that's a great example. Now, you mentioned the word transimagination.
Well done, you got it.
I got it. Yes, I had to hesitate a little bit and take it slowly. So tell us a little bit how that came about, what that means, and how you apply that.
Okay, so let's kick off with one of the great philosophers of the 20th century. His name was Albert Einstein. He also did a bit of physics, but fundamentally he was a philosopher. And he said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Now, with a man who had an IQ like him says, imagination is more important than knowledge, I'm going to run with it. What we tend to do in organizations is we in the past, pre-COVID, how many times do you reckon people will say that over the next 5 years? Pre-COVID, the people who were often the most influential in their business were, and I'll possibly get a few people excited when I say these, because they go, yeah, that's right. 55-year-old white male typically were running these, making most of the decisions. They've typically been in the organization for 25 years, and if they hadn't been, they've been in the industry for 25 years. And often that was caught, not so much the first part that I said, but the length of time in the environment is a bit about saying, when we go slightly off course, they will have seen this happen before and they know exactly which levers to pull it back on course. And that's great. That's really good if you want to get back on course. But now where we are in this, and by fluke, the transformagination thing just happened to land at the same time as the COVID thing landed, we need to get a bit more creative. And rather than turning around to the same people and saying, how do we get this thing back to where it was before? We need to be saying to some of the people who might be younger, who might have come from other industries, who might certainly be fresher of ideas, forget about what we used to do. I'm going to quote another philosopher, this one, Neil Diamond. Used to bees don't count anymore. They lay on the floor till we sweep them away. Start thinking outside of those dots and saying, what could we do? How do we get this thing moving? The only way you can do that is to give people permission to imagine and then present their imaginative thoughts. That, to me, is the crux of innovation. If you don't imagine, you're just going to basically base it on your previous experience, and that's never going to get you anywhere. So I say to organizations, it is time to change your mindset. And transformagination brings two words together, obviously. One's about imagination, the other one's about transformation. And transformation itself is a word that has been devalued so much in the last 5 years. When you used to be a change manager, now you're a transformation leader. And often transformation purely means big change. Now, transformation, here's an example. I'm in a meeting room, your standard boring corporate meeting room, and I decide I want to paint the wall bright red. That's a change management activity, because I'm going to have to say to people, don't use the room for the next 2 days. Here's a communication that's going out to say, don't use the room because we're going to paint the wall red. Often you don't even need to justify it. We're painting the wall red. End of story. We don't need to say because it makes the room look nicer or anything like that. That's a change. If I instead paint the wall red and make that meeting room into a cafe, I've now transformed it. I've made it something different to what it used to be. Transformagination says, what happens if we didn't have the walls? Let's suppose we were starting again. It's an awful analogy, but if your house burnt down in a bushfire, would you build your house exactly the same way as it was before? Probably not. That's where the transformagination thing comes in.
Hmm.
So it's a mindset change, an attitude change.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And I want to explore a little bit, how do you bring about that mindset change, and how do you kind of shift a culture that maybe doesn't embrace imagination or transformation yet? But I'll just make a comment on transformation. I mean, we have our transformational marketing program, and that is very much about, you know, it's not just change. It's actually taking people from one state to a different state.
Yes.
And that's how I see marketing, and it's all part of the whole customer journey. And to have that as a different way of looking at things and a different way of doing things, not just the standard old roadmap of I'll advertise, I'll promote, I'll cajole people into buying stuff, and then I'm done.
Mm.
So, yeah, so let's talk about culture in a business, and how do you shift a culture that perhaps has that, how do we get back on track mentality? Here's what worked before, and this will work again in the future once the current situation has settled down.
Well, here's a challenge I threw at a couple of people I know who run businesses, and I'll throw it to people who are listening to this. I want you to think about your business, the business, and I guess it's the person sitting at the top who's got the whole oversight of what's going on. Give yourself a score out of 100 as to how well your business was operating in terms of serving the needs of your customers. No round numbers. You can't use 80, 60, 40. You've got to come up with another number. If your number is 97, congratulations. You have got a business that was working really, really well for your customers before. But will it now? Probably not, because expectations have changed. Employee expectations have changed. Customer expectations have changed. Shareholder expectations have changed. So if your number used to be 63, because you can't have a round number, it wasn't working before, I've got some really bad news for you. It's going to be worse, right?
Worse.
Yeah. 63 was acceptable. It ain't no more. It might now be 47. Who knows? So I think the first thing that's important is acceptance that things will never be the same again. Now, you know, again, can I quote another philosopher?
Yeah, go for it.
Barry Gibb. Barry Gibb in the song Grease said, conventionality belongs to yesterday. And I think we've got to start saying, you've got to start thinking unconventionally. Can I say untypically, just in case it sounds like a complete plug? But I think that bit comes from the top. Someone's almost got to stand up and say, it's okay for us to start smashing the paradigm that we've lived in. And until that happens, people will just go, oh, well, you know, the guy at the top says this, so we'll do it. So the guy at the top's almost got to abdicate some degree of influence, if you will. That's the first part of the mindset, because I used to have this thinking, and you've been in a corporate world, you'll understand this. If the person who's your direct boss makes a really bad joke, you smile. If that person's boss tells a joke, you laugh raucously. If that person's boss tells a really bad joke, you are slapping your thigh and rolling around on the ground, regardless of how bad the joke is, right? Because the person three levels up said, therefore it must be funny. And I can remember there was a fairly well-known organization, which I won't name because it would be unfair, where the CEO used to come in the morning. It was one of those offices that had a big atrium, and he would stand on the top floor and preach to the team every Monday morning. And everyone used to go out there because he may provide us with some pearl of wisdom that will get us through the week. And it was almost like it was bordering on worship. That's got to go. We've got to start asking other people. And as soon as people start abdicating that responsibility to other people, I think that's where you'll see the mind shift. But I have a thing that I've invented. No, I haven't invented. I've invented a phrase for it called corporate inertia. Come across that one before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? You know,
I've come across the phrase and I've come across the what it is.
Yes. I brought together those two words a fair bit in recent times. And inertia, of course, for those who don't know, is the tendency for something to stay in a same state at the same speed, either at rest or going in the same direction at the same speed, unless some kind of external force is at it. How big an external force you need to apply to some of those businesses is the real trick towards getting that mindset change. My guess is bigger the business, bigger the external force.
And of course, the current COVID situation has provided a pretty substantial external force that nobody saw coming back in December of last year, I guess. Yep. And all of a sudden, 2020 has not gone as perhaps many of the business plans might have forecast. And how do you think businesses should be looking at reestablishing or repositioning themselves, looking at going forward, first of all, in the current situation? Because I think we've probably still got quite a ways to go before we can talk about post-COVID. And then, of course, positioning ourselves for a post-COVID environment where COVID is under control. Perhaps we even have a vaccine and we can go out and resume some sort of normal social interactions that we currently can't do.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because people keep on talking about the three R's, right? And interestingly, three R's, of course, ironically, bearing in mind that's about education, reading, writing, arithmetic, only one of those actually starts with an R. One starts with an A and one starts with a W. But parking those three R's, a different three R's that I think businesses need to think about at the moment are reset, reestablish, and regenerate. So the reset is a massive Control-Alt-Delete, which COVID has delivered for us. And every business, if businesses haven't realized there's a Control-Alt-Delete in their business already, I don't know what they've been doing for the last 5 or 6 months. So let's park the reset. Re-establishment, and you use that word, which is great. I think it's more than just saying, righto, everybody back to work. I think if I'll go back to the banking industry. In January 2019, there was the outcomes of the Royal Commission were announced, and there was some significant changes that required to be done in businesses that relate to banking and financial services. The people who were generally put in charge of doing that role worked their tails off throughout 2019. And by the end of 2019, we're exhausted because it was really, really intensive stuff. We got to the start of 2020 and the same people suddenly had to deal with the fact that, you know, a significant proportion of their customer base were impacted in some way by bushfires in Southeast Australia.
Mm.
And then just when they stumbled through that, someone's gone, you reckon that's bad? Hold my beer. Here's coronavirus. And the same people were forced into doing business continuity stuff. And business continuity plans, I suspect there'd be a few who, when they said, go and grab the business continuity plans, they blew the dust off and opened it up and said, as we approach the year 2000 and the 2000 or the Y2K bug, I suspect most business hadn't looked at it since then. So then these same four sods are given the role of then dragging this business from what it was operating normally in January, February, brackets, except for the bushfires, close brackets. And by the way, can you now take us into this massive business continuity thing? And now, as the sun starts to come up over the horizon of the post-COVID world, guess who's getting the same? They're getting the same thing asked of them. So these people have been working at 135% of their capacity for almost 2 years. And we're saying to them, by the way, can you start thinking about some creative ideas? Can you start thinking about how you're going to regenerate your business? They're out of good ideas. And that's, again, why we need to transformaginate. We need to say to other people, step up to the plate and bring your ideas. Don't go, well, that person over there used to do it for me. So now, no, step up to the plate. This is your opportunity. There's an expression that gets used far too frequently by consulting groups, disruption. Oh, it's all about disruption. Boy, have we had some disruption. And forget about disruption. I'm coming in to wave a slide pack around. I'm talking about unavoidable disruption, which we've been through. Now is the time to reestablish yourself post that disruption. And I think it needs to be different people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, there's been, I guess, the Banking Royal Commission here in Australia certainly was a bit of a disruption because it really challenged the business models that were running then and some of the practices that were standard practices and were deemed to have to change because they were either unethical or anti-competitive. And as you say, then all of a sudden, as they changed the business models and came out of that, all of a sudden they were challenged again, saying, hey, there's some other stuff coming along that's going to challenge our business model as well.
Mm. So it's just been a really solid slog for those people. It's a bit like saying, oh, you've run a marathon. Actually, you know what we're going to do? We're actually going to make you run an ultra marathon. And when you get to the finish line, they go, oh, sorry, we actually made an ultra triathlon. Off you go, jump in the water, start swimming.
Yeah.
It's just on for young and old, these guys.
Hmm. Okay. Now, media. I know media is a big part of your business and you've gotten into podcasting. So what have you learned from your media? You talked to us earlier about accidentally getting onto the radio when your daughter suddenly needed a co-host at short notice. And what have you learned over the journey of media? How did you come to podcasting from that early radio start? And how's that contributed to your business?
Well, I think it's fair to say that you don't go into radio or podcasting to make money. I think that's a fairly easy lesson to learn early doors. Yes, there's some money to be made, but it's not the sort of thing that you go, oh, gee, I tell you what, those people are on the radio every morning and earning their $1 million a year. Nah, forget that if that's where you're aiming. I think the thing with radio, when you and I, of course, are far too young to remember this, but I'm told that when TV came along, they said, that's it, movie, there will be no such thing as a movie theater anymore. And so, of course, that's been shown to be completely incorrect. And it was also, there was a song by the Buggles. I do refer to songs quite regularly. In 1979, that said, video killed the radio star and video was going to take over and radio was going to die. Radio is as healthy now as it has ever been. And one of the great times for listening to the radio is when you're doing other stuff, e.g. driving your car or you're cleaning the house. You can't sit and watch the TV and clean the house simultaneously. Well, I can. I just don't clean the house very well. But I think the thing with radio is it's a great medium. It's very personal. But the only problem with radio is if I'm doing a breakfast radio program, by definition, people need to be listening to it at 7 o'clock in the morning and they may not be out of bed yet. podcasting has the added advantage of being on demand. The listener, we talked a bit about customer experience. The listener chooses A, what they listen to, and B, when they listen to it. And that is, I guess, the obvious advantage of podcasting over radio. It's a bit trickier to run because there are people who are older than us who go, oh, podcast, I don't understand that. So it's a bit harder to get through that market, which I guess is something we need to work through. But I got into podcasting because, as you said before, you know, I just like testing things out. And someone told me about this thing called podcasting, and you didn't really need to spend a lot of money to get into it. And so I created a podcast associated with my brand a little while ago called the BizWiz Project, I think I called it, because at that stage I had a business called the BizWiz. And it was just me talking at people. And that didn't really work all that well. So I did sort of 7 or 8 episodes and pulled the pin. But now I think I've found a bit of a niche in terms of conversational podcasting. I actually now, it's that sort of thing that keeps changing. I'm up to 7 podcasts now. And, you know, some of them have been parked and I can just bring them back whenever I want to. But I just think it's an opportunity for anybody to be a broadcaster. That's part of the appeal as well.
Yeah. And a lot of radio stations are actually now, I see the ABC and SBS in particular have gone into podcasting in a big way. And I think it's primarily that on-demand thing. And if you look at all the TV stations here in Australia, they have their on-demand system where you can go and watch a show on demand.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's limited because obviously there's bandwidth restrictions on that. And so they kind of give you three weeks often to watch a show, catch up on a show. And also the great Australian internet is really struggling with those feed services, which, you know, audio doesn't have that bandwidth requirement. So the audio on demand is a really big thing. And I see that growing quite a bit.
Yeah, I think, well, the other thing is too, you know, when you've got a head like mine, you're never going to make money in terms of being on video. I mean, you're a handsome man, so you'd probably get away with it. But I think in my situation, it's, I think audio is good. I think the other thing is too, we've mentioned the fact that you and I are both introverts, and there are people shaking their heads going, these clowns aren't introverts. They don't really understand the concept of introversion, I suspect, if that's the case, because it's one thing to be an outgoing person as distinct from an introvert. I'd much rather sit here in the room and talk into a microphone and listen to someone through headphones than I would stand up in front of a group of 2,000 people. I can sit on a radio. I could have 1 million people listening to me on the radio and it wouldn't faze me at all. It's unlikely I'm going to get 1 million people listening to me on the radio. But whereas if I was doing it from a video perspective, I tend to freeze up a bit. And that's where I need to get out of the aforementioned comfort zone and start doing a bit of that stuff. But I think you're right. In terms of audio on demand, it's low bandwidth. I think I'm right in saying I have an online radio station that I think it's about 40 meg an hour that it's down, that it, in terms of bandwidth. So it's not big numbers.
All right. So you mentioned conversational podcasting. One of the things that I certainly find challenging, I have 2 podcasts, this one that we're on now, which is a conversational one. And then one I do where I tell some stories as metaphors for lessons around marketing. And that's just me talking. And I find that quite challenging, but I'm stretching myself on purpose there. I'm getting out of my comfort zone. I'm taking a bit of a jump there. There's a bunch of things there that really challenge me. And how do you find, you know, the difference between a conversational type podcast and going on, whether it's, I mean, you talked about video. And often on video, you're just presenting to a camera, which is just a small little box of some sort. And I find that quite challenging too, to feel as though I'm relating to somebody. And perhaps that's part of doing the solo podcast, because I don't have anybody there that's I'm relating to and that I can bounce something back and forth off.
Yeah, I think the conversational thing also adds another dimension that I do a program where I'm trying to teach people how to podcast. And one of the questions that is often asked is, should I do conversational? Should I do presentation? If you have something to say, by all means, go down the presentation path. But I've got an analogy that I often use, and it used to be the White Commodore analogy, but now Holden have made the decision that they're not going to make those anymore. We'll make it the White Camry analogy. And you walk into a car dealership and you say to the car dealer, I want to buy a White Camry. And he says, come with me. goes out the back and opens up the door, and there's 10,000 white Camrys. How do you choose the white Camry? Some people will say, it's got good tyres. Another one will say it's got good rego. Another one will say it's got low Ks, whatever it is. You'll make a decision based on something to do with the white Camry. But if it's not obvious why your white Camry stands out, it won't get bought. Well, it's a bit the same with your podcast. How many podcasts do you reckon there are that are about real estate investment or well-being or setting up your business or whatever? Something, you have to have something different about your message that makes it stand out. It's the equivalent of having a really good sound system in your Camry. Now, for some people, that's really easy. For other people, it's less easy to have some kind of message that stands out. The great thing about conversationalism is, by definition, you will be unique. Because you and I started this conversation, whenever it was, half an hour ago, 37 minutes ago, it says here, and we had no idea where we'd end up, right? Mm. And that's the unique factor associated with conversational podcasting. I don't know where you're going to go. You don't know where I'm going to go. And therefore, there's a bit of edge about it, and you can't put it into a box. But if you listen to Untypical Thoughts, which is my presentation one, you go, oh, here he goes again. He's going to bang on about transformation. He's going to bang on about thinking outside the box, all those sorts of things, because that's what I do. So that's the advantage of conversational podcasting in my mind. It's always going to be different.
Hmm. All right. Now, talk to us then a little bit about marketing of the podcast, because a lot of people I talk to around podcasting, I say, okay, I've recorded a podcast, I've published it, I've got it out on the platform, it's in the Apple directory, it's on Google Podcasts, it's on Spotify, which is the big one now. So I'm done, right? So there's thousands of people who are going to find me. It's kind of the field of dreams analogy for websites all over again.
That's it. Yeah, it's. I've had a number of people say, I had someone ring me up one day and say, I'm thinking of doing a podcast. Who do you reckon will listen to it? And I laughed. And he said, why are you laughing? And I said, well, think about it. If I said to you, I'm going to produce a new brand of coffee, who's going to drink it? I mean, it's a dumb question. And we pointed out the fact that it's a dumb question. I think part of the reason some people do podcasting, and I don't know whether you fall into this category, I wrote a book around about the same time as Newton was inventing gravity. It's a long, long, long time ago that I wrote this book. I had to write the book because if I didn't, I would go nuts. It was inside my head and it was bouncing around. If I didn't get rid of it, it was like a full filing cabinet. That was the reason I wrote the book. Well, it's a bit the same as some podcasts. Some people do podcasts because they've just got something they've got to get out of their head. Now, if that's where you are, you don't care about who listens to it, you haven't got a problem. If you're using it to build your brand, it's no different to saying, I've invented a new brand of coffee, or I've got a line of clothing that I want to promote. You've got to think about who's going to buy it, why they want to buy it, what makes your line of clothing different to Mr. Levi's or Mr. whoever down the track. All the sorts of questions that you would do with any other product, you've got to think about that in the context of your podcast. And I think that's the bit that is missing. As you say, it's a field of dreams. I'll put a podcast out, 1 million people will listen to it. And I think it also depends on what you define as success. I've got WowPod, as you said, and WowPod, I get on average about 80 or 90 downloads per episode. That's okay. I'm happy with that. It's 80 or 90 more than I thought I'd get to start with, to be perfectly honest. So is that successful? Yeah, it's successful because it's doing what I want it to do. But if you're saying I need to get 100,000 listeners to this podcast, and if I don't, it's not going to be successful because it's driving my brand. Yeah, you got some marketing issues to deal with, I would have thought.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I had to laugh because just before I jumped onto the call, I was cleaning up some LinkedIn messages, and I'd posted a week or so ago, I'd posted a short video on identifying your ideal audience for a podcast and how you go about doing that. And there's somebody who's been having a conversation with me on LinkedIn about starting up a podcast and getting some tips. And the question was, is this something that is of value even if you haven't started the podcast yet? And I had to laugh because my response was, well, actually, it's the first thing you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are you doing it for?
And I think the other thing too, and I know this is a really simple one. I was going to point at the wall and then realize we're doing an audio podcast, which is not going to help a lot. But my logo for WowPod is a bright orange speech bubble with the word wow written across it, right? So when you're flicking through the 9 billion podcasts that are in those stores, having something orange against navy blue with the word wow on it, to me, is so much better than a smiling face of someone going, well-being tips with Brian. It's something about grabbing the attention, no different to if you walk into a shop and you see a coffee brand that's got a bright red pack standing there or has got a funky name or something like that. It's all about how you present. It's just another product. It's no different to anything else.
Mm, yeah, so you've got to stand out. You've got to find a way to stand out to start with. All right, well, this is fascinating, Neil. I could go on talking radio and podcasting for ages, obviously, something that I'm passionate about too. But I think it's a good time to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us an answer that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Excellent. That's what we want to do.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I'm allowed to do two things with my number one. Molly Meldrum used to have 11 in his top 10 on Countdown all those years ago, so I can't say why not. You need to eliminate two things. One is eliminate the should and eliminate the apostrophe. So start thinking beyond should and start thinking towards could. And unless you can come up with a really good contracted word that has an apostrophe in it that's positive, get rid of it.
Hmm. Yeah, I love it. That to me is, you know, what I said earlier is kind of moving from that scarcity mindset to the abundance mindset, moving from necessity driven to possibility.
So absolutely. Yeah.
What can we do? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Can I quote another philosopher? Yep. There was a bloke called John Lennon in 1971 who wrote a song called Imagine.
Imagine. Yeah.
Forget what used to work. Start focusing on the coulds again. People laugh at me. I think they laugh in front of me. I think they laugh behind my back as well. The number of different brand names, number of different Facebook pages I've had over the journey. I just keep trying new ideas until something clicks. I think I'm an ideas generator. That's what I do. And I think if you have a great idea and it lands first go, fantastic, go and do it. But don't be afraid to try new ideas. And I keep on trying new ideas, and I've got friends who ring me up and go, here comes another harebrained idea from Neil. But I think trying ideas means you'll stumble over something sooner or later that works.
So lots of experiments.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now, do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
Yeah, people.
People. As an introvert, that's surprising.
But. Yeah, no, I like to engage with people who demonstrate a transformative mindset. Walk into a room and identify the one who's been transformative, and that's a word I can now say and no one else can because it's a stumbling one. I can pretty quickly work out who the people are. I mean, your business name, InnovaBiz, I always stumble over it. My initial business name was Innova. I can't even say it now. Innovo was my original business name. So we were kind of brothers from another mother or something. But I can immediately work out the people who have a similar kind of mindset, and I go towards them. The other thing I love to do is bite off more than I can chew and then chew like crazy. That's another aspect of it. They're the sort of people I like to mix with. So people are my main resource.
Love it. Yeah. And you've reminded me, so a couple of episodes ago, I spoke with Chris Barrows Brown on the Innova Buzz podcast, and his business is Upping Your Elvis. And I said, well, where did that come from, the Upping Your Elvis? And he said, well, it comes from Bono when he was doing his initial fundraising and getting people on board. He'd go into a meeting of, you know, a corporation or somebody who he's pitching to help finance his charity, and he'd say, okay, now who's Elvis here? Who's the person that stands out, that's out of the ordinary, that you know, it's going to shake things up.
Sorry, it had to be. Right. It was sitting there. Had to be done.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. And what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Again, I'm the people who've worked with me will tell you I am hopeless when it comes to Gantt charts, spreadsheets, any of that sort of stuff. I'm very much a freestyler in that respect. So the best way I keep a project on track is constant engagement with people. And I know, again, that sounds really weird for an introvert. I'm an outgoing introvert. I think I'm ambivert is a word that I'm allowed to use. Work with people, not for people. So don't work for a client. Work with the client, because when it comes to tracking tools, the only tracking tool that I really focus on is the one that involves me chatting to people.
So constant communication.
Yeah, and I guess more than communication, I'll pick you up on the semantics of that word, engagement, more so than communication. Communication is an indication of one way. Engagement is about making sure they're on the ride with you. So that's just a little game of semantics there for you.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. Make sure they're on the ride with you. Yep.
Mm. Yep.
Okay, and what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I've read that question. If it was the number one thing I do to differentiate myself, I don't think outside the box, I burn the box. And I said that earlier, but I think if you are prepared to burn the box and get away from the things that you know will work, that's going to differentiate yourself from the world. You used a word earlier, which I let you get away with earlier. That is calling me a business consultant. The word consultant to me, I cringe when I hear the word because it's got all the implications of being in corporate and working with consultants. So I talk about being an ideas generator and a problem solver. And those are the two phrases I tend to use. I'm either going in to create an idea, sort of take someone from where they are to move them forward, or solve a problem, get from where they are to where they need to be, that kind of stuff. So I think that's how I differentiate myself.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. So burn the box and stop using the word consult. Yeah, I don't know how that snuck into our vocabulary. I don't know if I copied that from somewhere, but
probably. Yeah. No, you did say it before. I thought, no, I'll let him go past. That's okay. No, I'm not going to make it fast.
All right. So this has been fabulous, Neil. Now, where can people find out more about you, listening to your podcast, listening to your radio show?
Well, I guess the hub of it's the Untypical website, and on there we've broken Untypical into Untypical Thinking, Untypical Small Biz, Untypical Media, Untypical People. All the media stuff is under Untypical Media, funnily enough. All the stuff around what I do, Transform Imagination, all that sort of stuff is under Untypical Thinking. So go to untypical.com.au. All the contact details are there. If people want to have a chat, there's an opportunity to schedule a 30 or 60 minute chat with me, and we can just chat about stuff. Completely not, no obligation, just chatting about stuff and where people want to be.
Great. And we'll post links in the show notes so people can just click straight through.
Yep.
So do you have some parting advice today for the listener?
I reckon there are two things, and one of them is a great Australian phrase that doesn't get used anywhere near enough, and that is have a crack.
Yep.
Too many people worry about what might happen. What's that phrase? Instead of worrying about what might go wrong, think about what might go right, or whatever it is, that phrase. So have a crack. That to me is a really good one. The other one is be authentic. I tried for a very long time to be someone who I wasn't, so I fitted in with the corporate model. And I was told once, I will never get anywhere while I don't take my job seriously. And I thought, that's really good, because people are seeing me coming in and thinking differently. I'm actually stirring the pot. I'm throwing the rock in the pond, as I like to say, and then watching the ripples go. So be you. I'm getting too old to try and be somebody else. And the other great thing about being yourself is everyone else is already taken. So if you be yourself, you'll get places. I think that's really important.
And it costs a lot less energy to be yourself. Okay. That's wonderful. Yeah. And have a crack. I like the, and I can't remember who to attribute this to, but basically the conventional wisdom of if I do this, what will people think of me? Well, people generally don't spend anywhere near the amount of time thinking about what you do or why you do it than what you think they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is too, there are people who go, I've always wanted to start my own business, let's say, right? Well, have a crack. And if it all turns to custard in 3 months' time, it's not the end of the world, particularly if you are fortunate enough to live with someone who has some income that can keep the bills pressure off by bringing in another income. Just say, okay, I'm going to give myself 3 months. And if after 3 months I'm in no better place than I am now, well, at least I didn't die wondering. Have a crack. It's just a really good opportunity to do stuff, because you only go around once.
Mm, that's right. And there's lots to be learned. I mean, I've found being in business on my own, there's so much you learn.
Oh, absolutely.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights. Actually, I'd need to ask you one more question. Who else should I get on the podcast and why?
There are two people who jump into my mind, and one is based in the UK and the other one is based in Melbourne. So let me run both past, if you like. The first one, the one in the UK, is a chap called James Mulvaney. Now, James is the person who has established two platforms, both of which I use. One is called radio.co, and that's where I have my online radio station, goradio.live. It broadcasts off there, and I have a second radio station I'm about to launch on the same platform. The other one is called podcast.co, which is where I host all of my podcasts. He's just one of those people. I'm guessing he's in his early 30s, that sort of age group. And he's just up and about the whole time and doesn't...
Does he run Matchmaker as well?
Yeah, he does, yeah. Now, for those who are concerned about that, Matchmaker is not what you think it is. It's a... that's how you and I met, despite the fact we live 5 kilometers from one another. We met on a platform on the other side of the world. Yes, that's exactly who it is. Matchmaker is where podcast guests and podcast hosts meet and they can sort of line each other up, which is how this happened. The other one is a lady called Emily Wallace. Now, Emily, I would think, is probably late 20s. She has established a buyer's advocate business, and she, in fact, helped me buy my property here. But she's also got an education arm to her business where she educates people on using LinkedIn. And she's also got an online program called The Buyer's Coach. And it's about home buyers wanting to buy a house and the steps involved. Apart from the fact that, you know, the interesting thing she's achieved, she's in her late 20s. I don't know anyone who's got more energy or more entrepreneurial spirit in this part of the world. She's just up and about the whole time. And she's just popped up on Ticker TV, which is the new online television station here for Australian businesses. She's just Emily everywhere and is just a really interesting young lady. And I tell you what, if you can get her on this podcast and I can't get her on mine, look out. I've been chasing her for about 6 months and she's even submitted her application. We can't get the times to line up. So good luck getting that one.
All right. Well, we'll get an introduction from you to James and Emily, although I'm probably connected to James anyway, because I'm on the Matchmaker platform, as you said.
Yeah.
And we'll see if we can get both of them on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Neil. This has been fabulous. We've had a lot of fun talking about transformation, transformation, and podcasting and radio, as well as a whole lot of other things. So thanks for giving us your take on all those. I've really enjoyed myself. I hope you have too. And I hope the listener gets a lot out of this. All the best for the future. And let's have a coffee soon, because I think they've eased the restrictions a little bit as of tomorrow.
We only have to wait another 11 hours and 21 minutes. Not that anyone's counting.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, thanks for your time. Thanks for the invite. It's great.
I hope you enjoyed that really engaging and insightful conversation with Neil and took something away from his episode. I really enjoyed talking with Neil about all things change and innovation, and of course we did geek out a little bit about podcasting, a shared passion of ours. I'd love to know what you took away from Neil's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Neil Butler. That is NEILBUTLER, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Neil Butler. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Neil there, as well as links to the Untypical website, to his social media pages, to the WowPod podcast and his other podcasts, as well as the resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Neil suggested that we have a conversation with James Mulvaney of podcast.co and buyer's advocate and LinkedIn specialist Emily Wallace on a future Innova Buzz podcast episode. So James and Emily, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Neil Butler. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including Marcel McCarthy of 1-2 and personal branding expert Tamara Glick. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.